Center for Inclusive Childcare welcomes you to Inclusion Matters. We share resources and information to support quality childcare for all children. By partnering with early childhood professionals, parents, grandparents, and other caregivers, we work together to help every young child thrive. Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I am so excited about our conversation today with a dear friend and also a former and past guest, Dr. Chris Gendro, who has been a pediatrician serving kids and families for 32 years. And so she joined us a while back talking about kind of the more of the physiology of behavior and what pediatricians would do if a child came in with behavior. So that's one episode that we did with Chris a while ago. And Chris, you're back today to talk to us about nutrition and how that can connect to behavior. Welcome, Chris Gendro.
Well, thank you, Priscilla. It's always wonderful. And it's such an important topic to talk about how things can affect behavior. Because so often, if kids aren't comfortable in their bodies for whatever reason, that's how it comes out. And if we can work on some things like nutrition and how their brain works, and it all will just lead to happier, healthier, more resilient kids. And I think when it comes to nutrition, the connection's interesting because there's the obvious one. You feel yucky after eating all your Halloween candy. You eat all the French fries and your stomach hurts. Or it's your first day of school and you're worried and now your stomach hurts.
Yeah.
And you know, so they're very connected. So that's the obvious piece, but the science is really cool that there's so much going on in the gut that has to do with we think of as going on with our brains, that it's just obvious that these two things are super connected.
I'm excited. This sounds like something so useful for our listeners, Chris. I'm really happy that you suggested this topic.
That's wonderful, because I think that understanding even a little piece of the underlying science will make it easier to have the discussion about what we should do and not do when it comes to kids' nutrition. So the two big sciencey pieces, one is what people will call the microbiome, big word that just means the good, bad bacteria that are fighting it out in your digestion. So lots and lots of sugar feeds some of the less healthy bacteria, but then there are some other things that can feed the good bacteria. What we're really starting to learn is that good bacteria actually is where some of the really important neurotransmitters for our brains, the chemicals that work at our brain in our brains, come from the good bacteria in our gut. So serotonin for mood, dopamine for focus, all sorts of other ones. But that's part of where they actually come from, is in the gut. So, and something that I think I heard people dabble in that discussion, and it was considered, well, is that real? Well, yeah, it's very real. And those same bacteria, they help the immune system stay strong. There's some of that obvious good, bad, that balance where you just simply feel better when those things are in balance. You're less gassy, less crampy. But then the other piece of the science is that the lining of the intestine is one cell wall thick. It's this super important fence that is one cell wall thick. And I think of it as a fence when it's healthy, that it has nice big pickets that go right up against each other, and it keeps all the good stuff in and the bad stuff out. Because those cells have special little fingers that help bring in the nutrition. So you really want that wall to be as tight as it can be. If those cells start to shrivel from things like too much sugar, toxins, infections, stress, then now that fence doesn't work real well. Between those fence posts, toxins can come in, infections can come in, things that weren't meant to come in our body and inflames our body can come in. And there's that some theory that that's where some autoimmune diseases come from. That's where allergy to things come from. You'll hear people talk about the leaky gut. Yeah. And if yeah. if that gut is leaky, it leads to inflammation in the body. And we know that inflammation in the body is one of many things that can lead to dysregulation in the nervous system. And I right. think we finally know, understand that dysregulation in kids' nervous systems is so often the origin of behaviors that are challenging.
Absolutely. Wow. I love the analogy of the fence, which really helps. And I'm sure that's helpful when you're meeting with families to talk to them about what possibly could be going on with their child's health and nutrition, to give those really nice pictures. It just helps illustrate it clearer for those of us who do not live in the science world.
Yes. Yeah. And having it in something that kids can get too. So that when you're talking to them about, you know, it's not just here's the food you should eat. It's here's why.
Yeah. That's fabulous. So when you think about, I mean, we hear so much, and especially, you know, as a new parent, and there's so much information about what's a healthy diet, what's not a healthy diet, what do you need to be taking in every day? And it sounds to me a little bit too, that what you're saying is maybe it's not as much of a one size fits all. There might be some unique things that individuals in the way that their systems are made up might be processing food differently. But as a general rule, when you're working with a family and you have a child who's maybe struggling with picking some of those good foods, or a parent who's just trying to set their child up for success, what are some things that you share with them when you're talking about the healthy diet for a child who's developing?
Yeah, and you're right. I think it is there is not a one size fits all, although there are some basic important things, because so many theories out there, and these theories change. Sometimes one is more popular than the other. But to start negative, to start with, what do you avoid? There's someone that we'll talk about in a minute, a physician who does a lot of work around this, that calls the things to avoid the microbiome mischief makers. What are the things that mess with your microbiome? And it's too much sugar. It's ultra processed foods, because they tend to have 5 times the sugar of something that's not ultra processed. They're low in fiber. They have lots of additives. Toxins in foods, like certain non-organic fruits and vegetables, all those things kind of hurt the good bacteria and they damage the lining. So that's the what do we avoid? But what do we encourage? That's where I think this can get really interesting for caregivers, parents, all of that, is three categories of foods that really make a big difference. Fiber, superfoods, and fermented foods, as being the foods that really help that microbiome and that intestinal lining be healthy. So fiber fuels the good bacteria and aids digestion. That's fresh fruits and vegetables, nuts and grains, and the big heavy hitters, lentils and beans. Now that's a place where I will frequently use a supplement. And yes, in general, doing real foods is a better thing, but that's a nice place to get to use a supplement. Superfoods, the colorful foods, the red, the green, the purple, the blackberries, all of that, they just are very healing to the leaky gut, and also are really calming. They help to calm inflammation. So eating the rainbow. That's sort of a visual kids can get their heads around.
Yes.
And like I tell kids, there's nothing wrong with white foods, you know, bananas, apples, potatoes. They just don't have the punch that the blueberries, the blackberries, the melons, that those have.
Yeah.
That is a place that may as well go down this road for a second. That is a place where when I have families very worried that their kids aren't eating vegetables, but they eat every bright fruit. And I'll say, okay, you know, if you can eat as many bright fruits as possible, maybe you can get away with not eating quite so many vegetables.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure that that's a huge relief, because I think sometimes there's such a panic when you are responsible for this little person in your life, and you're trying to make sure that everything is going their way to set them up for success long term. It can be super stressful trying to get them to eat.
Yeah. And you read, like, you're only supposed to eat lentils and broccoli.
Yeah, right.
No. Oh. The third one, which is the harder sell in the American diet, but I really think it doesn't need to be, is fermented foods. Mm-hmm. Because they not only directly just give you good bacteria in your gut, it really helps support what's there. There, and every ethnicity, if you look at the diets of every culture, has something that is a fermented food. Sauerkraut, miso, kimchi, injera, dosa, poi, tempeh, kombucha. And then the easy ones, what should be the easy ones, yogurt and sourdough bread.
Yeah.
So how do you take all of those? I mean, those would be sort of the basics of what would a good diet look like, a diet that has those things plus other things. But I think that when you're thinking about behavior, the science is really saying that working on those three things helps the gut. And if you help that part of the gut, then behavior is better.
And I think that that is something, even just for folks who haven't really even thought of the connection, to be listening and going, oh, that's another avenue that I can work with families that are in my childcare or in my, you know, family childcare, that we can talk things through and say, let's talk about what your child is eating at home. We know what they're eating while they're here in childcare, but what are they eating at home? We also have, you know, and this happens for a lot of children on their path of development, where they decide they're only going to eat foods that are one color, or, you know, they can develop very, very distinct patterns and get kind of stuck in a rut. And this is where that behavior comes in, because then we, as that caregiver, that adult in their life, sometimes choose the path of least resistance, which can mm-hmm. create challenging patterns.
It's interesting that you said that about because that's, I think, one of the barriers. You know, when you look at barriers to kids eating this diet, there's some bigger picture items, like our the way our society eats, the standard American diet. Mm-hmm. Cost of some of these foods, yes, is not always easy, although there are very easy ways to make your own fermented foods, which is interesting. And we can talk about a resource for that. Access to foods. I mean, we just know these food deserts are a real thing. And then, of course, the experience and the modeling of what are kids seeing their parents eat.
Yes.
And but then if you have a child who's already not been eating well, and eating is only one piece of dysregulation in the nervous system, of course, but if they're already dysregulated, they're not going to like texture. Some of these tastes might be scary. They're mm-hmm. new. They're bright colored. You know, they're shocking.
Yeah, right.
So how do you help, which is for the chicken and the egg? How do you calm down the dysregulation so a child can accept some of these foods?
Right. And that is a challenge. And when you think of kind of the heavy hitters of the things that you're supporting families through as far as their pediatrician, does nutrition and eating habits come up a lot for kids?
Constantly. Every well check for sure.
Okay.
But as we learn more and more of these things, I'm discovering that more and more of what used to be not times to talk about nutrition, a teenager with migraines, Yeah, we might talk about water, but are we talking about all the processed foods they're eating and the extra sugar and all of that? And that there's all, and then just a child who comes in concerned about ADHD, far more discussion. It's a harder discussion sometimes because I don't ever want parents to feel like they caused their child's issues. Yeah. But I think it's just the reality that we, those of us who have had little kids, that you can lead the child to the table, but you can't make them eat.
Yes, exactly. And
that it's not a perfect, can't make those good foods go in.
Right.
But we can come up with some strategies for doing that though.
Yeah. Which is, I'm sure, such a gift to a family when they come in with those questions to say, yes, I know about all these good things, fiber, superfoods, fermented foods, but we're just stuck with Easy Mac every day and chicken fingers. And that's all my child will eat. And there's a tantrum, and there's either it's a tantrum or not eating or those things. I mean, so not to put you on the spot, doctor, but...
But what do you do? What do you do?
Do you do?
I think, and so much depends on the age of the child, but the first thing you do is you talk about it, and you don't talk about it as good foods and bad foods. You talk about feel good foods, yummy tummy foods, growing foods that, and you talk about and you reflect on those times that you know will happen when they overeat something. And you talk about how this food really made you feel icky. And you can talk that icky is, you know, you get that bad stomach ache. And so then you can't go play soccer very well because your stomach doesn't feel good. Or you don't sleep because remember how you were awake all night because of that. So, and I think that the more you talk about it, the more aware they are. And I think you've also just set the stage for kids being aware of their bodies, which I think helps so much when it comes to behavior, no matter where it's coming from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love the way you categorize that. You flipped the typical context for how people are referring to things of, you know, bad foods, good foods. That is so important. And I think when we look at, as you said, any behaviors, and when we think of the early childhood field in general, all we're trying to do is help children understand their emotions, how they interact with other human beings, all of those things. This is where we're laying the groundwork for their that whole lifetime.
Yeah, so it's not just food. But there are some little things that I think, again, a resource that I'm going to talk about later, it talks about it in some fun ways. You know, how do you expand in these healthy choices? How do you bring in new things? So same yum, different fun. So is one expression. So sweet potato fries instead of regular potato fries.
Okay.
Doing lentil chips instead of pita chips, you know, things that maybe just have a few more of those good nutrients.
Okay.
Trying to have lists of what some of these like healthy tummy foods are, and how can we add one more? Challenge kids to how can we add one more to foods, like adding nuts to salads, lentils to soup. My favorite, which I did, and they didn't even know it for years, was shredded carrots in the mac and cheese. Because it just blends. You just boil it with the noodles, and it just blends in with the cheese.
Amazing.
And then smoothies. But smoothies that aren't juice, sugared yogurt, ice cream, you know, using Greek yogurt, using spices. They found spices can be really good for your gut. A little bit of sweetness is okay, like using a little bit of honey or dates, things like that. And a really big one is talking to kids about what they drink, that water is, it should be our beverage, and that almost every other drink is like drinking a candy bar. So, you know, do you drink a candy bar? No. So, you know, chocolate milk is great, but it's like drinking a candy bar. So have it as your treat. It's not the beverage that goes with lunch. And most like juice type drinks are like that too.
Sure. Yeah. What was the little saying you said about when you're inserting just different choices? Was it same yum,
different fun?
Same yum, different fun.
It's yummy. It's a fry, but it's got some different fun. It's the sweet potato or the beet. Yeah. And even simple things like food that's play, like teaching kids how to dye eggs with beets and how cool that purple is. Oh, and could we dye what, you know, and maybe you take a food that maybe they're not so thrilled about, but let's make it pretty. Let's do that with that too. And just make them look at food a little differently. I think I'm noticing time. I want to talk about a couple of resources that might be helpful. One is an app called Solid Starts. And it's great for babies and toddlers, but even goes up a little higher, like how to introduce certain foods. What's nice about the toddlers is that it gives parents and caregivers examples of all the different bright colored fruits and vegetables and what's the age appropriate size and way to give it to them, which is nice.
That's fabulous.
HealthyChildren.org is a website by the Academy of Pediatrics that has lots of information, but a great nutrition section. Nice. And then for a really deep dive for someone who really wants to get into it is a book by a pediatrician named Alyssa Song. And it's called Healthy Kids, Happy Kids. And she's an integrative pediatrician. She does some functional medicine. And it's a real guide to how do we help kids be more resilient. And it's all about gut health. And in there are recipes that people could make, like at childcare, where we know that kids will frequently eat things at daycare and school that they would never touch at home. Yeah. So there's recipes for some of these fermented foods, for these high fiber foods that kids can be part of making.
Oh, I love it. Well, and for our listeners too, we will include links to these resources that Dr. Gendreau is sharing on our website with our podcast description so that you can access some of these. So those will be made available so that our listeners can easily get that information. Dr. Chris Gendreau, thank you so much for your time today, for the expertise that you're sharing, for clearly, one thing I'll just say this because Chris is a friend, but I think our listeners also are gleaning this. Can you imagine having her as your pediatrician? How fabulous would that be? Nice. There's just such a kindness about you, a respect for each family as individuals and each child as something precious. And I so appreciate that about you. So thank you for joining us today on Inclusion Matters. And for those of you who are listening, you know where to find us, inclusivechildcare.org. And we look forward to having you back, Dr. Chris Gendreau.
Thank you, Priscilla. It's been very nice.
For more information and a wide range of resources, visit inclusivechildcare.org. You'll find information on our coaching services and support on topics such as healthy child development, strategies for encouraging positive behavior, and guidance on including children with unique social, emotional, and learning needs, and much more.